This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Today's show is pre-recorded, so we won't be able to take your questions and comments. Reds player William Hoy lost his hearing at the age of 3 due to meningitis. He not only grew up to be one of the greatest and most beloved baseball players of his time, he changed the way the game was played forever. Nancy Chernin recently published a children's book about the Reds Hall of Famer. WVXU's Howard Wilkinson talked with her about the life and career of William Dummy Hoy.
Nancy, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Howard. Such a pleasure.
The William Hoy story, the book that you've written, a children's book, has a subtitle, How a Deaf Baseball Player Changed the Game. And, of course, here in Cincinnati, there are people who know about William Dummy Hoy as a member of the Reds Hall of Fame. But there are an awful lot of fans who don't know the background and the story of how he came to the major leagues and how he came eventually to Cincinnati. Tell us the story of William Hoy.
Well, it's really a remarkable story. I mean, you have a young boy. He's born when Abraham Lincoln is president. And as he's growing up, baseball is this newfangled game that people think his father tells him this will never last. But he loves this game. He loves it so much. And he has lost his hearing at age 3 due to meningitis. And he goes to the Ohio State School for the Deaf. And oh, how he tries out to be on this team, and they keep saying, you're too small. I mean, he was about 5'4", and I think he might have eked his way up to 5'5" at one point, but he was always too small. But he just wouldn't give up, and he just kept practicing and practicing and practicing till he could hit any ball, he could catch it anywhere. He was so fast, and he gets noticed. He tries out for a minor league team, mm-hmm. and he gets on to in Oshkosh for Wisconsin, but he's struggling because he's in a hearing world. And at this point, baseball again is new. Nobody is signing. Nobody is telling you if there are balls or strikes. So he doesn't know if he's
right.
when he's up there at bat, you know, what he should be doing. So he's having trouble at first, and then he gets this idea that he'll tell the umpires, hey, if you put up this hand for balls and you put up this hand for strikes, if you make the sign for safe, you make the sign for out, that's really going to help me. Well,
yeah.
It not only helped him, I mean, he became, he sets a National League record for stolen bases in his first major league rookie year with the Washington Nationals. And he ends up playing for several teams. It is a big deal when he signed with the Cincinnati Reds because he's an Ohio boy. He's born in Hoketown, and that's where
right.
his family farm is. So that was really proud, and the crowds just loved him. And so he wasn't the only person who introduced signals, but he popularized them because he played so many years, taught them to all his teammates, taught them to the crowds, and the crowds loved him so much
yeah.
that when he came on the field, they would wave their arms. So what we now know is a typical baseball thing, waving your hands, waving your hats.
Sure.
That's deaf applause.
Yeah.
That's deaf applause. We do that because of William Hoy.
And it wasn't easy. Obviously, and you write about this in the book, that he was humiliated one day when he struck out and he didn't know it.
Absolutely.
Because the umpire was making those signals, and he had the pitcher laughing at him and people in the stands laughing at him. And that's what motivated him to come up with these hand signals.
Absolutely. And he just didn't give up. And he just knew he had to find a way. And when he thought about those signals and how those signals had helped him navigate the world, navigate the hearing world of his family,
mm-hmm.
he realized if he could bring that to baseball. The cool thing about it is not only did it help him become a successful player when he introduced the signals, but it was good for everybody. He could have secret plays with his teammates. They could discuss strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And also the people in the stands. Remember, these are the days before the Jumbotrons, and
right.
nobody had screens or instant replay. So this people in the far-off stands who couldn't hear the umpires could see those signs. It made the game better for everybody, and that's the real heart of the book. Is that it's not an issue of overcoming challenges. It's not a challenge. He was proud of being deaf. He used his difference to make the game better for everybody.
When he first came up, in Oshkosh and later in the National League, how did his teammates react to having a deaf teammate, his hearing teammates?
Well, it was hard at the beginning because before he had the signs, there was a lot of prejudice against deaf people. They weren't well integrated into the hearing world. So if someone wanted to cover their mouths, then he couldn't read their lips. If they turned away, he couldn't read their lips. When he introduces the signs, though, and gets them interested in the signs, he starts making friends. And as a matter of fact, there are some pictures of him with some of the old timers. I have a picture of him with Connie Mack.
Yeah.
And they're sitting there and they're signing together. He played with a lot of players, yes, who made the Hall of Fame. And they love that. They learned signing from Hoy. Oh, and he had such a great sense of humor. He never had a chip on his shoulder about it. I remember, this is a wonderful story about him going to a hotel with his teammates, and it was a real noisy party in the hotel, and oh my gosh, the whole team, they were all bleary-eyed in the morning, exhausted. There was only one person who wasn't exhausted, the very well-rested William Hoy, who wrote on his little notepad, "It's great to be deaf."
Yeah. And you know, and obviously, I mean, he is known, you know, even today as Dummy Hoy, which, you know, these days is a term which is, you know, just not used in polite society. But in the 1890s, it was different.
It was very common then. And that was the interesting thing, because I worked with Steve Sandy, who is an activist in the deaf community. He's the one who urged me to write this book.
Yeah.
And he explained to me that dummy was actually a word of pride then, because that's how everyone who was deaf was referred to as dummy. And we discussed it, and we agreed that children, though, wouldn't understand that because they think of dumb as meaning stupid.
Yeah.
And that would be very insulting. So what I did was I just call him William Hoy in the book, but then afterwards I say more about William Hoy, and I let them know that he was often referred to as Dummy Hoy. It was just simply a name for being deaf back then. As a matter of fact, he was so smart. He was the valedictorian of the Ohio State School for the Deaf.
Is that right?
And also, and I have to give a shout out too to Steve Sandy. He was such an enormous help. He is a friend of the Hoy family. The Hoy family has been behind this and been proud of this. And Steve was endlessly patient. I had so many questions, and he provided me with newspaper articles from the 19th century. Every question he answered. And I also am so grateful to Eric Nadell, who is the Texas Rangers radio announcer, National Baseball Hall of Fame honoree. He also fact-checked everything with me. I wanted to make sure everything was right that it would work for the kids, but that everything was right for the people who really knew the story.
Yeah, Dummy Hoy, actually, I mean, he was a terrific ball player. I mean, he was very good. You pointed out about the stolen bases. I mean, he hit over 303 times in a 14-year career. He scored 100 runs 8 times.
Absolutely.
He had an on-base percentage of over 400 4 times, and that on-base percentage over 400 is considered terrific for any ball player.
Absolutely. And Howard, I have to ask you, I got to turn this interview around.
Okay.
You actually saw him. You saw him. He was 99 years old when he threw out that ball in the World Series
for the
Cincinnati Reds. So
saw him on television. Yeah, that's all right.
So what did he look like? What was your impression? Did you know the whole history of him when you watched him do that?
I was kind of fortunate because I grew up in, you know, my dad was a big baseball fan, and he knew the stories, you know, of the history of the Reds. And he told me about him. And I said, oh, that's pretty neat. And I can remember, you know, talking about this, you know, the creation of the signs. And even to this day, Nancy, when I go to a ball game, and I go to a lot of them, when I see an umpire, you know, throw his hand up for a strike or make a safe sign, I think of Dummy Hoy.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's quite a tribute. I'm hoping that the kids who read this book, that they will think of him that way, too. I mean, you're lucky to have a dad who took you to these games and to teach you the history. And And I just still can't get over that you actually saw him on television.
Well, it was an amazing thing because, you know, he's had such a long life. You pointed out that he was born in 1862 when Abraham Lincoln was president.
Now, that's right.
After he threw out the first pitch in the Game 3 of the 1961 World Series, he passed away a few months later. In the presidency of John F. Kennedy.
That's right.
At the age of 99. That was a long life.
It was. He lived through so many changes, and he dealt with everything with such grace. I have to tell you, the other thing that's astonishing about him, Howard, is that I do all this research. I mean, I'm a longtime journalist myself. I'm the theater critic for the Dallas Morning News.
Yes.
And I do all this research, and I fully expect when I research somebody, you're going to find good stuff, you're going to find some bad stuff, and, you know, you decide how to focus your story. I couldn't find anything bad on this guy. 99 years. Oh, he was just a terrific guy. He was so... The stories about him are legendary, and they're all good. I mean, for instance, it was a story about when he's out on the field... You know, he was called the king of center field because he could just catch anything. He's out there, catches a ball, umpire calls the batter out, and he waves his hand, and he writes, and the umpire says, "What? I called him out. You caught the ball." And he shows the pad, says, "He touches the ground." "Nope, touch the ground." I mean, he doesn't say that. He shows,
yeah,
and they went,
right?
"Okay, guy's safe."
That's
and, you know, who? He's honest. People knew they could trust him. He married a deaf woman, raised hearing children, all of whom were successful.
Yeah.
Maintained friendships. After his illustrious baseball career, he worked for Goodyear. He organized a team of deaf workers into the Goodyear Silence. He was always giving back to the community. He was always helping others. He was just a great guy.
Yeah, he had. I know that, you know, after his baseball career, he had lived in Mount Healthy here in Cincinnati, and was very, very active in the community and active with the Reds too.
Oh, absolutely! I think he had a lifetime pass to the Reds games, and the Reds treated him well. He was so proud, and that's in the book too. I mean, he played for a lot of teams, but that was a special time of pride. You know, his time with the Reds. That was his home team, and that's where he wanted to live. He saved all his money, didn't gamble, didn't drink, saved his money, bought that farm, and my goodness, that was a time. When if you were deaf, people didn't even expect you to live independently.
Yeah.
People who were deaf tended to be sent to asylums or they lived at home with their families. But he had that farm. He figured out a way to make it work. He even had a mechanism over the door so that if someone came to the door and they knocked, the ball would fall, tumble down, hit the ground, vibrate, and then he knew someone was at the door.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was
so
like
smart.
A cannonball, wasn't it, or something?
Exactly.
Like that.
It had to be that loud. So, but he figured he would always figuring out ways to make it work. He was not
that's ingenious.
That's how he was. And that's how he was with the signals. When it just wasn't working, he figured out, if I use these signals, then I can play this game I love.
Right.
And, as I said, he made it better for everybody.
Now, you say there are descendants of William Hoyer are still around here?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. And again, I've known him mostly through my long-distance friend, Steve Sandy, whom we, email, and we email. We're always in communication. And he speaks for not technically speaks, but he writes for the Hoy family. And Adam Hoy wrote he's a descendant, and he wrote a lovely note saying, thank you for writing about my grandfather. And I was so touched. I think the family is rightfully proud of him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're proud of him. The deaf community is proud of him. And you know, it's actually really been so marvelous. I've not only gone to schools for the deaf and hearing impaired, but also to hearing schools. And those kids are so inspired. They're inspired by a story of perseverance. They're interested in learning some sign language. I usually like to have an interpreter with me so we can teach the kids some sign language. It's a beautiful language. And it should be more widely known. And if it was more widely known, then I think it would be easier for, the deaf and to be more integrated into the hearing world as they should be.
Well, yeah, that was one of my questions was, you know, just how do the hearing children who read this book tend to react to it?
Well, it's really been beautiful. And the last school that I was at, which is Hexter Elementary in Dallas, it was all hearing kids. Oh, and they gave me a big packet of papers with their drawings and what Hoy meant to them and how they related to the fact that he never gave up. I mean, that was what was so remarkable about him, was that he persevered. When they said he was too small, he just practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced. And then when it looked like there was a barrier because he was deaf in a hearing world, he taught hearing people the signals so that he could be part of that world too. Mm-hmm. And they related to it. They related to it if they wanted to play baseball. They related to it if they liked to dance. They related to it if they worked hard at school and were trying to move from one level to another level. Sure. They would say, this is how I relate to Hoy. And then they were so intrigued by the specificity of him being deaf, and they were so intrigued by the language. And then when I finished speaking to them, they thanked me by waving their hands with deaf applause. I started to cry.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yes.
And obviously, you know, Dummy Hoy is a member of good standing in the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame. But,
well, he should be.
But, mm-hmm. you know, of course, oh, yes, absolutely should be. But there are people who would like to see him in the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Is that right?
Absolutely. And that's really how this whole thing got started. The real backstory of this was that I had written a small item for the morning news about Alan Meyer, who happens to be a playwright who has a deaf daughter, wrote a play called The Signals Season of Dummy Hoy. Mm-hmm. And that was 30 years ago. And a high school in Garland had performed it. And I wrote a little item about that. And I get this email thanking me from Steve Sandy and from Ohio. And I emailed him back, you're welcome, but why is someone in Ohio interested in a show in Garland, Texas? And he's got Hoy on Google Alerts because his goal, he's been working for decades to get Hoy into the Hall of Fame, the National Hall of Fame in Cooperstown.
Well, maybe
and
that...
We want to spread the word.
Yeah, and we hope that will happen someday. But his plaque is in the Reds Hall of Fame in Cincinnati. And also, this is opening day for the Reds. And your book.
Go Reds!
that's right. Your book is also in the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame Museum gift shop.
I'm so proud. And I know Hoy would be so proud to have his name up there on the gift shop on opening day. And where would he want to be more than any place else on opening day than at a Cincinnati Reds game?
Well, that's right. Well, thank you very much, Nancy. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Howard. It's just been such a pleasure.
WVXU's Howard Wilkinson speaking with author Nancy Chernin about her new book, The William Hoy Story, How a Deaf Baseball Player Changed the Game. After the break, Ann Thompson looks at computerizing the role of umpires. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.